It's September 22nd, 2010, and welcome to another edition of Bite Marks Cafe, where we serve you the first bite of today's technology. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ryan Ozawa, and we'll be your geeks in residence for the next hour.
First, we'll look at the latest tech news and happenings in Hawaii and beyond, and we have Derek Sonoda here to tell us about the Hawaii Energy Expo.
Finally, we'll explore new options in residential solar power systems with Alex Tiller from Sunetric, Mark Duda from Revolution, and joining us by phone later, Lynn Jurich from Sunrun. Have your questions ready, but first, the headlines.
This past Monday, the RQ-4 Global Hawk, an unmanned remotely piloted aerial vehicle used for intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance, or ISR, was unveiled at a ceremony at Anderson Air Force Base in Guam. General Gary North, U.S. Pacific Air Force's commander, hosted the event, which featured the Global Hawk, an F-22 Raptor, F-15 Eagle, and F-18 Hornet in a showcase of air power in the Pacific region.
According to General North, the Global Hawk brings significant capabilities to the Pacific Theater, benefiting the 36th Wing, Pacific Air Forces, U.S. Pacific Command, and regional partners. General North said, "Having intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance capability within the Pacific greatly enhances Air Force operational intelligence capabilities to meet mission requirements. The Global Hawk will enhance our ability to address regional challenges such as humanitarian assistance, disaster relief, terrorism, and piracy."
The Global Hawk is capable of providing near real-time, high-altitude, long-range ISR imagery to government and military decision-makers, supporting a full spectrum of operations. Flying above ordinary commercial traffic, the aircraft can survey large geographic regions with pinpoint accuracy without impacting civilian aircraft routes. The imagery provides the most current information available during contingencies or crisis situation. And I got a chance to fly down on a C-17 to participate in this ceremony that unveiled the Global Hawk. And the idea of it being in Guam, obviously it has about a 3,000-mile radius, and it can stay in flight about 30 hours.
Hmm.
And the idea is that it actually can get to the 3,000-mile destination and stay up there for another 8 hours. Taking pictures and doing the surveillance work.
So Guam is a better location probably than Hawaii.
Than Hawaii, right. Because we're pretty much encircled by ocean. Right?
And it flies at 60,000 feet, so that's pretty high up
that's
there.
That's pretty high up there. And it's composed of three different types of sensor arrays. It's infrared, electro-optic, and synthetic aperture radar. So it has a capability of actually being able to, you know, use the different sensors and you know, let's say, pierce the veil of clouds or anything that are obstructing the view. So it's a pretty cool looking thing. And if you look at it, it looks sort of like a mud puppy or something. It has a really very unique kind of appearance. And it, you know, a lot of people were commenting, but this doesn't look like a plane at all.
Right, it looks a little bit like a bug, but it's not going to be in the air show in Kaneohe this weekend, though.
No. This is something that is a pretty special piece of equipment. I think it runs somewhere around $35 to $70 million a piece, and it's not something that you could easily fly, you know, in an air show. The control of the aircraft, the Global Hawk, is primarily done, let's say from the hangar and takeoff is in Guam, but the actual mission control is over at Beale Air Force Base.
Mm. But there's actually a lot going on in Guam. I mean, there was also a story this week about the new Guam Navy Hospital being built, $168 million contract, a lot of it going to a company here, Watts Constructor. So I think it's kind of cool that you were able to go down there to see some of this local involvement in the military.
It was a fast trip, like 36 hours. But yeah, Guam is definitely getting a lot of federal money because there's a lot of military buildup. There's the Air Force, there's the Navy, and also the Marines are headed down there too.
Next up, the University of Hawaii has received a $9 million three-year grant from the National Institutes of Health to support research and programs at UH Mauna, UH Hilo, and several community colleges statewide. The grant will focus on neuroscience and natural products research, a significant portion of it conducted in a collaboration between the John A. Byrne School of Medicine at UH Mauna and the UH Hilo College of Pharmacy.
The hope is to help the college build its research capabilities and infrastructure by funding research facility renovations and providing faculty research support. 7 of the 14 junior faculty researchers involved in the grants are based in Hilo. These funds are one of several grants awarded by the NIH National Center of Research Resources and aims to build the research base at institutions and to support early career researchers hoping to become independent scientists.
The goal is to provide opportunities for undergraduates, creating a pipeline of students interested in careers in the health sciences. The hope is that they will become independently funded investigators that pursue their own grant funding opportunities. In 2001, a very similar grant for $6 million actually established the Biomedical Research Infrastructure Network at UH Manoa.
And, you know, the other schools, there's going to be three of these junior researchers over at Manoa, two at Chaminade, two over at HPU, in addition to the seven that's over at UH Hilo.
But definitely it's a strong focus on biomedical research, bringing together talent across these different institutions. But specifically, I like that it's, like many grants, I guess, to try to instill in them sort of that independent research ability so that after they get through this program, they can get their own grants and continue research on their own.
Right. I think they're always looking for these kinds of sort of seed grants so that some of the junior researchers can get nurtured into the full research positions.
Yeah, but some of this money also goes toward a summer outreach program. They're basically focusing on bioinformatics and computer-based research. So it'll be good to see what work comes out of it.
Next up, the Department of Hawaiian Homelands has announced a partnership with Keahole Solar Power to build the state's largest concentrating solar power project. The 5-megawatt facility will be built at Kalailoa, formerly known as Barber's Point. Dubbed Kalailoa Solar One, the project is the first renewable energy project for DHHL. In addition to generating power, it will provide rent revenue for the department, which will in part fund a renewable energy education program for Native Hawaiians.
Concentrating solar power, or CSP, uses mirrored reflectors and optics that can rotate to follow the sun through the sky, which raises the system's energy efficiency. Keahole Solar Power is a spinoff of Sopuji, which specializes in CSP equipment. Last year, the company inaugurated its Holaniku plant on the Big Island. That facility now generates 2 megawatts of electricity and has 2 hours of thermal energy storage, selling energy to the Hawaiian Electric Light Company.
Keahole Solar Power was founded by local entrepreneur Darren Kimura, who was our news guest last week. The company's stated goal is to be generating 30 megawatts of solar power statewide by 2015. Kaulana Park, chairman of the Hawaiian Homelands Commission, said in a statement, "This partnership is a result of the department's energy policy and demonstrates DHHL's commitment to a clean energy future." And the I guess the news of this is that, you know, the lease has finally been signed, and I know, but there've been some television commercials about this partnership that exists. And the most recent one I saw was with featuring Darren Kimura and basically the array of solar units that they have already kind of set up for this.
Well, the plant on the Big Island is a 2-megawatt, as we said, plant. It powers about 5,000 homes, but that requires 1,000 collectors, 4 acres of land, and it cost about $20 million to build it. So this new one at Kalailoa is going to be more than twice that size, I would imagine, for 5 megawatts of power. But these CSP collectors are pretty neat looking. You can actually go by Sopuji's offices down in near Mapunapuna, kind of off Lagoon Drive, and they've got one out in the parking lot.
Yeah, so it's a pretty neat thing, and it's great to see them really getting some of these installations underway and providing basically a power purchase agreements to some of these commercial entities.
Right, so they're going to be doing with HECO here what they were doing with HELCO on the Big Island. So I'd definitely be interested in seeing how quite large that facility is. They said they wanted to maybe have it built by the end of next year. Finally, people have looked for symbols and significance in the clouds for eons, but recent research has uncovered new information on cloud formation, and it turns out that people are partly responsible for creating them. Oceanographers at the University of Hawaii published one of two papers focused on clouds in the journal Science last week, concluding in part that human activity plays a large part in what we see in the sky.
Researcher Anthony Clark and his colleagues at UH looked at data collected from several different experiments conducted over the past 5 years, each one involving collecting atmospheric samples from planes as they flew over the Pacific Ocean. The study found that aerosol particles put into the air by humans, such as those released by gas-powered engines or agricultural activities, happen to be ideally suited to reflecting and bending sunlight, ultimately creating clouds.
Clouds formed by these aerosol particles also tend to be brighter white than natural clouds, reflecting more light and potentially cooling the air. This could have implications for research into climate change, as greenhouse gases are believed to contribute to a warmer atmosphere. In a separate study, an international team of 10 scientists look at cloud formation over the Amazon, where the effects of human activity are minimal. They found a stronger correlation between clouds and rainfall and the rainforest below.
So these two different studies, one went into a fairly pristine area like the Amazon, and the other obviously went into maybe more areas that had some aerosol pollution in it. Now, one of the interesting things that I read was that they actually did a smell test of some of these clouds. I'm not sure how exactly they did that, but they definitely said that it smelled different.
Right. They took 11 major airborne campaigns, basically flying over the Pacific, and took about 1,000 vertical profiles of the air. But definitely interesting stuff in the sense that humans are making clouds that are, I guess, perhaps they have a greater impact than clouds that might form naturally. And when they talk about cloud formation specifically, they're saying, well, maybe this might explain how you might get less frequent rain, but when it comes more intense rain in areas that have higher pollution. So, you know, we might just stare up at the clouds, but these scientists are doing a little bit more than that.
Well, you know, definitely when flying from, let's say, Guam to Hawaii, there's a lot of thunder clouds because they're all coming in right now. But, you know, it's I'm curious to see if some of those clouds that they measured were over the open ocean like the Pacific, because that's a pretty pristine area as well.
That's true. That's true. Well, we wanted to let you know about an upcoming event that might be of interest. Next Tuesday, the UH Office of Technology Transfer and Economic Development will present its Fall 2010 Technology Showcase. The event will feature devices and research projects with potential for patents, licensing, and other business opportunities. There will be life science technology demonstrations developed by students and faculty from the College of Engineering, the John A. Burns School of Medicine, and other programs.
The event is being hosted by BAE Systems in partnership with the High Tech Development Corporation and Enterprise Honolulu. It's taking place on September 28 at the Bankers Club on the 30th floor of the First Hawaiian Center. To attend, you'll need to RSVP by Friday, September 24th. You can contact Lee Taylor by emailing ltaylor, T-A-Y-L-A-L-O-R, 2, at hawaii.edu, or look up the event details on techhui.com. Again, it's the Fall Technology Showcase next Tuesday downtown. Just email ltaylor2@hawaii.edu. And that was a pretty good show that I saw about, you know, back in the spring. So I think it's well worth the
check it out.
Yeah. And that's it for the news. Now joining us is Derek Sonoda from the Hawaii Energy Conservation and Efficiency Program. And he's here to tell us about the Hawaii Energy Expo 2010. Derek, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, we're going to have a great show this year. This Energy Expo 2010 is geared towards commercial customers. And it's going to be for large energy users. You know, so many people talk about energy and they don't know really the size of an energy user. So let me give you some four examples, yeah? The kind of people who come out to these events, their electricity bill every month, a small one would be about $20,000. A large bill would be somewhere in the name of about $500,000 to a little over $1 million each month. So sometimes people go, oh, my bill is so big. And then I look at them and say, well, you know, sometimes it's a lot larger. So it could be worse. So energy, this conference is geared to help those large entities really make a difference for the state of Hawaii. When these guys do something, the people who attend this conference, when they want to make an effort for conservation, it actually moves the needle at the power plants.
True.
Because they do so much, yeah? And they actually have a lot of influence in the other business communities. I'll give you a for example. When the Hilton Hawaiian Village here does something, everybody else kind of follows because they set a really good example for conservation, renewables, even recycling. So people look at them as a leader.
So this event is actually taking place at the Hilton Hawaiian Village, and that'll also be on Tuesday.
September 28th.
Right. What are some of the different tracks? I mean, what are some of the topics specifically for these large energy consumers that you're going to have?
That's a great question. Let me tell you, we're going to be talking about LED technologies. And LED, everybody knows LED. They love it. It's in their computers. It's in flashlights. But LED technology for general everyday use has some ways to go. And the reason for that is most people don't realize that the standards, they just came out in August. They're up until that point. If you sell an LED product, You could make whatever claims you wanted to claim, saying yours is the best thing since sliced bread, and no one could dispute you because there was no standard. So we actually have a gentleman coming in who is here as a representative of the Department of Energy. He's going to explain to Hawaii, all these big energy users, what's the real truth about LED technologies. And the reason why that's important is every single salesman coming back from China, going to mainland USA where they're home, is coming to Hawaii, stopping by and trying to write off their vacation here. And everybody is getting assaulted by these guys, but nobody knows which one is good and which one's not good. So we have a gentleman, his name is John Curran. He's going to be coming in to help us understand LED technology. So many people don't realize it's much more complex than just that. Then we have another guy. High performance lighting. His name is Chip Israel. We are so happy to have him here. He does extreme high-end millionaire homes plus resorts. So he has done 8 Disney resorts around the globe. He is on his number 9th Disney resort, and you're never going to guess where it is.
Is he going to do the one out here?
Yeah. So happy to come talk to us. And, you know, a lot of people, especially architects and maybe interior designers, don't really know how to use energy efficiency lighting in a beautiful way. So this gentleman is going to help us understand how to use energy efficient lighting in a beautiful way. And once we can get the higher end resorts to all pick up on all the styles, it is so easy to get everybody else just jumping on the bandwagon. Yes, it doesn't have to look like the dentist's office. Yeah,
so,
all of those things.
So your organization has put this on before, this conference?
We used to be, myself, yeah, we used to be part of HECO, HELCO, and MECO. Mm-hmm. And then last year, we got separated. So the program that takes care of solar hot water rebates, Energy Star appliances, Energy Star lighting, and everything else got separated, and they got put out to bid. We now report directly to the PUC, and there is an entity, and our name is called Hawaii Energy. So we just go to the commission. The commission says, that's good. We want you to go down this route. They've been really great. We've expanded the program in the last year. It's just finished our first year than we've ever done before. So I've been with the program, let's just call it the program, since about 2000, and it moved at July 2009. Mm-hmm. And now we've expanded it. So we only used to take Hawaiian Electric. Used to only do this island. This group called Hawaii Energy now takes care of all the islands except for Kauai. And we've done such a outreach that we've never done before. We partner with Blue Planet. You guys might have heard of Blue Planet.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was on the thing. And we partnered with Kohala Center and some other groups around the islands to help spread the message. And it's what we're trying to get across is it's not just Hawaii Energy who's doing all of this. Every single person who comes to Hawaii, who lives here, has to be part of the solution. And the reason for that is if we do not start to get off of the dependency of oil, the devices we have in this room can no longer exist.
Right.
You cannot use your computers. You cannot use anything that uses electricity because it's going to cost you so much money. Yeah, that it's just not going to be feasible.
No, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Now, the event also has an expo component. I understand that it's sold out. Who are some of the, some of the presenters or the expo partners you're going to have?
Well, at this event, we are going to have major lighting guys, air conditioning people, a lot of photovoltaics, even thermal, solar. All of those things are coming along. And more interesting is these are the experts. So a lot of people don't understand. And wants to go, and they can actually find out from the manufacturers themselves, hey, what did you mean by this? And LEDs are going to be there all over the place on this whole thing, and there's going to be a tremendous amount of education.
Well, excellent. So where can someone find more information on this expo?
Oh, if you can go to hawaiienergy.com. And one of the things that people don't know is this is really your program. So both you, Ryan and Bert, you contribute into this fund. It's right off the top of your bill. So you'll benefit by coming just to Hawaii Energy. You not only learn how to save, but actually where to find energy savings. We take it from the residential home all the way up to the big resort. So come to Hawaii Energy. Take a look at it.
Excellent.
Thanks, Derek, for joining us.
Thank you.
And that's what's been happening this week. We'll take a short break. And when we return, we'll be talking to Alex Tiller from Sunetric, Mark Duda from Revolution, and Lynn Jurich from Sunrun about solar options for the homeowner.
Is this the right time to get solar power for your home? Share your thoughts by calling us at 941-3689 or toll free from the Neighbor Islands, 877-941-3689.
You can also tweet us your questions at Bite Marks or at Hawaii. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Foodland's annual Give Aloha program ends September 30th. This station is among the community organizations that can earn a portion of the generous matching funds made available by Foodland and the Western Union Foundation. To participate, make a contribution to Hawaii Public Radio at any Foodland or Sac & Save store. Information at hawaiipublicradio.org.
Uplifting my eyes from the page, they fell upon the naked face of the hill and upon an object, upon some living monster of hideous conformation.
Strange behavior on the next Selected Shorts from PRI, Public Radio International.
Saturday afternoon at 2.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ryan Ozawa. Joining us today are Alex Tiller from Synetric, Mark Duda from Revolusun. Alex is the CEO of Synetric and has nearly two decades of strategic business development experience in the financial services and high technology fields.
How expensive is it to get into solar? You can give us a call at 941-3689 or from the neighbor islands at 1-877-941-3689.
Mark Duda is a founding partner of Revolusun and the president of the Hawaii Solar Association. We want to welcome you both here to Bite Marks Cafe.
Thanks, Ryan. It's great to be here.
Thanks, Bert. Thanks, Ryan. We really appreciate it.
So let's start with Alex. You just got off a flight from Denver and join us in the studio. What do you guys see as being the sort of the solar situation here in Hawaii? I mean, I know you guys have been doing business for quite a while, and it's sort of evolved over time, but what do you see the environment like right now?
Yeah, Synetric started off in 2004 here in Hawaii in the solar business, primarily as a solar thermal company. And that industry has definitely done well for Hawaii. I do see a lot of progression, and it's primarily based on tax incentives and things of that nature that are really driving the industry towards photovoltaics, which is what we're primarily involved in at this point. And that we're seeing big savings for both commercial and residential customers. It just makes sense to go solar at this point. In lots of other parts of the country, it's still difficult to really make the math work. Energy is cheap. Where I just came from in Denver, it's 9 cents a kilowatt hour. Mm-hmm. We're right around 24 cents a kilowatt hour residential here on Oahu, and much higher than that on the neighbor islands. So, the higher the cost of energy, the sooner the system essentially pays for itself. The more economically feasible it becomes, and the better the opportunity for the end consumer.
Now, Mark, I know you've been a guest at Hawaii Public Radio before, largely with the energy show that we had previously. But for the benefit of our listeners to our show, I'd be kind of curious on your take on the same question. I mean, right now, when it comes to solar water heating, it's almost, it's universal. In fact, I think that there is a law that will come into effect to kind of make those systems mandatory on new houses. So it almost sounds like a natural transition point to start looking at photovoltaic power for home systems. Are you seeing that? And is this really a pivot point for Hawaii?
I think it's definitely a pivot point in terms of the appeal of PV. I don't think that the solar thermal market is losing any of its appeal. It's just kind of being joined by a really strong partner. On the thermal side, or what people usually call solar or solar water heating, we're at about 25% penetration statewide on single-family homes, not including high-rise condos, that type of thing. So, that's significant, and that puts us, that means that we've got about half of all of the installed systems in the country. Nobody's near that rate in any other state, and that's great. At the same time, there's a lot of work to be done, and I think that some of the policymakers are looking at trying to get us all the way to 100% or near 100% on this thing. So we're going to need to kind of keep the pressure on there. As Alex mentioned, it's definitely the case, though, that the PV market is taking off in a way that it hasn't before, and there's sort of a lot of things that are driving that. The prices have come down. The incentives are strong right now. The cost of power is high, although it's been higher recently. But people really got a scare in 2008, and I think that jump-started us. So you have that, and you just have a lot of talk and interest in renewable energy. And people, I think, kind of just more generally don't want to be linked to the cost of oil for one of their key expenditures for the foreseeable future. And so we're probably both getting a lot of phone calls for that reason.
Absolutely. And Ryan, you brought up that recent law that passed that seeks to put solar thermal on every new construction project that's being built. There's actually a waiver, depending on what your interest is and what your personal uses are or projected to be for that home. You can substitute photovoltaics. You don't have to go with just solar thermal on that. So that's kind of an interesting little – as long as you're doing one or the other – then you're, you know, it'll be approved and you're doing the right thing.
So you could do either and meet the requirements.
You could do both. You could do either or. Excellent. Absolutely, and meet the requirements.
You know, we want to encourage everybody to call if you have a question about solar, because we got the experts here. You can reach us at 941-3689 or from the neighbor islands at 1-877-941-3689. And we had a shy caller call and wants to know about microinverters. Who wants to tackle that one?
Sure. Why don't I do that one?
Okay, Mark.
In general, I guess we should start by defining what an inverter is, since not everyone's going to know, even though you have a relatively tech-savvy audience for the show, obviously. The inverter is the device that converts the DC power coming out of the panels into AC power, which is what you use in your home or business. And typically, that is what we call a central or a string inverter, an inverter with a lot of solar panels attached to it. The alternative to that, though, is something called a microinverter, which is one small inverter linked to a single panel. And, you know, I think the original motivation for these things was that in a condition where part of the array is shaded or there's different orientations of some of the modules on a single system, they end up performing differently. And so when that's the case, what happens is that more or less the performance of the entire group is dragged down to the level of the lowest performing module. Mm-hmm. And so in general, you want to avoid that in those type of situations. And so, you know, it's actually a fantastic invention, this microinverter. And so now what we see out in the marketplace is both kinds of systems. The microinverter is great for those kind of situations. The central inverter is also still very viable. It's not become obsolete just because the microinverter exists, but people really do go with both sorts of systems these days, and mm-hmm. it's a great new world in that sense.
Yeah, I would add to that I would say Sonetrics installing about 80% of our residential projects now on a microinverter technology. The customers really appreciate the technology. As Mark pointed out, it has its benefits and some superiority to it compared to the older string inverter technology. But it also lets the homeowner really get to dial in on their own computer and be able to look and see what they're getting production-wise out of each panel. And if there's a problem with the panel, they can call us up and get it replaced with under warranty right away.
We have another caller on the line. We want to welcome Lily Kala to Bite Marks Cafe. Welcome to the show.
Hello?
Hi,
hello,
Lily Kala.
Oh, you sound like you're underwater. Sorry. I'm calling because I think it's great for us to be going solar, and I'm thinking about putting a photovoltaic system into my house. I'm at a townhouse, and just our family lives here. But I'm wondering how much it costs, actually. What are the rebates you get either from federal or state, and then what's left over? How much actually does it cost after the rebates?
Well, that's a great question.
Probably a tough question.
Yeah.
Thanks for your call. Alex, do you want to try to tackle that? I mean, that I think is one of the biggest barriers for someone trying to go that way.
Yeah, I would say that's usually the first question that someone asks. Mm-hmm. And Lily, thank you for calling in. It's a great question. We appreciate your interest. You know, fundamentally, the price varies based on a number of things. And the first thing that we would investigate is really, you know, how much is your monthly power bill? How much usage is your family? You know, what is your usage and where are you located? The actual location of your home or townhome or whatever it might be makes a great deal of difference. If you're in Kaneohe, it's going to be a little bit cloudier over there, and you're going to have a little bit less production. Still a very viable option, though, versus, you know, Honolulu. Honolulu's townside is going to have much more sun being on the leeward side. So there's definitely a few different things that come into play. They size the system based on that. I can tell you that you can get into systems after the incentives down in the $3,000 neighborhood. That cheap. Now you do have to pay for the system up front, and then it becomes $3,000 essentially after the tax incentives.
Yeah, I think the thing to add to that is that you know, if you're thinking in very general terms, you're probably looking at somewhere between 6 and 9 years for the the system to pay off or pay back on a PV system. For a residential system, for a commercial system, it's less. For a solar water heating system, it should be closer to 2 years. So again, that's a rule of thumb, and all of the variables that Alex mentioned definitely do come into play if you're going to directly purchase the system. One of the kind of new things that we've started to see are financing options where you'd put, you know, no or very little money down at the beginning and then just pay for the energy over time. This is kind of a residential adaptation of something that's been going on for a long time in the commercial market. You see these on, for instance, school districts and water districts in California, that type of thing, where they're very large systems, where a third party will buy the system, install it, sell energy to the customer. Or to the end user, essentially. And, you know, more recently, again, we're seeing this done at a residential level.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're talking with Alex Tiller from Synectric, Mark Duda from Revolusun. And on that question of costs and upfront, you know, concerns for consumers, we'd like to now welcome to the show a guest by phone. We'd like to welcome Lynn Jurich from Sunrun to Bite Marks Cafe. Welcome to the show, Lynn.
Hi, thank you.
Hi. Now, what brought this show together was a story that we did just recently about your company and your partnership with these two companies. Why don't you give us just sort of the brief rundown of what Sunrun brings to the Hawaii market?
Sure. Sunrun is the leading residential solar company in the country right now, and we're very excited to just enter Hawaii about 3 weeks ago with both Synectric and Revolusun. And Lily's question is perfectly appropriate because what we do is essentially allow homeowners to get solar energy without having to worry about it at all. So we pay for the system. One of our partners, Synectric or Revolusun, builds the system. We continue to maintain the system so you don't have to worry about anything. And then you just pay a monthly fee for the solar electricity. And it's actually less money than what you're currently paying your utility company. So it's really delivering this service model where you don't have to pay anything to switch and you're saving money over time.
So in essence, Lynn, you folks become kind of like the electric company in serving up solar electricity.
Exactly. We are similar to a utility company. We're basically a utility company on your rooftop where the good news is you get to fix your rates. So we sign a 20-year agreement or contract with you, the homeowner, and that rate is fixed over the next 20 years. So it really protects you in the event that your rates are going to rise from your conventional utility company.
Now, Alex, you know, you were mentioning again how there might be a period of payoff for a conventional system. It can come down to a certain price. What, as one of the partners with Sunrun, what do you think will change about some of the systems that you're installing, or perhaps
right.
nothing at all?
Right. Synectric thinks this is, you know, from our standpoint, we feel like this is just a tremendous opportunity for the homeowners here in Hawaii that are a little bit on the fence. You know, you don't really have to worry about any payback period. You don't have to worry about any time for incentives to kick in, for your tax incentives to get some of that money back to you. Basically, you sign up on day one, you start saving approximately 15%. And again, there's a few varying factors there depending on your location and so forth. But zero out of pocket, and you just pay for it over the long run. You know, it's really like Lynn said, it's an alternative to the utility. So far, you haven't had an alternative other than to purchase your own system. Now there's a B plan. Basically, there's an alternative, and it's tremendous. It's an opportunity to get solar energy and do it for very inexpensively.
You know, the callers are kind of queuing up, and we want to welcome Mike on the line. I want to welcome you to Bite Marks Cafe.
Oh, hello. How are you?
Good.
Yes, I just had a quick question about the Sunrun program.
Sure.
Well, I know that right now it's a very exciting program, but as far as I understand it, it's only being offered through two companies right now. My contractor is actually a different company, if I can say their name on the air. It's Hawaiian Island Solar. It's a company I trust, and I was just wondering if I can use my original contractor who did my solar water heating.
We'll let Lynn take that one.
Well, Lynn, how do you want to tackle that one?
Sure. You know, we're always looking to partner with, you know, great local contractors, and we identified Synectric and Revolusun from our headquarters here in California, and you know, please feel free to give us a call or look at our website, sunrunhome.com. But, you know, again, we're really pleased with the two partners that we're launching with right now.
I'd say Alex and I are encouraged by the fact that they seem to only have about two partners in each state. So, you know, we're hoping to continue to generate enough value that they like it this way, frankly.
Yeah, quite frankly, Sunrun's very choosy in who they partner with, and we think they made a very wise selection.
Well, Lynn, you know, in terms of trying to manage, you know, the homeowner and their sort of maintenance agreements, I would think that it would really require somebody local that can be your feet on the ground in Hawaii. And so there must be some fairly stringent requirements that some of the local integrators need to live up to.
Absolutely. We put, you know, both of our partners here through the ringer, you know, in terms of looking at their warranty and their quality and how enduring these systems are going to be. And then the other thing that we do is we monitor the performance of the system. So we have about 5,000 customers right now across 7 states in the continental U.S., and we've developed analytics around how much power can we produce, how do we maximize the power out of these systems. And so we submit, you know, we monitor these remotely through the wireless network, and so we can really anticipate if there are any problems or any challenges for the homeowner. And then we have both Synetric and Revolucion on the ground to, you know, help our collective customers if there's anything that comes up.
We have another caller on the line, and if you'd like to ask a question to the experts, you can as well. We're talking to Alex Tiller from Synetric, Mark Duda from Revolusun, and Lynn Durich on the phone from Sunrun. You can give us a call at 941-3689 on Oahu or 877-941-3689 to call toll-free from the Neighbor Islands, as did Pat from Lanai. Welcome to Bite Marks Cafe.
Aloha, guys. I'm not getting a clear picture of the relationship to these systems to the grid and the need for batteries, or are you completely disconnected from the grid? And I need a little help on understanding that. The reason I raise the question is that on Lanai, we are aware that MECO is not taking any more electricity, so I'm not sure how that's all working. And I'll take the answer off the air.
That's a great question, Pat.
Yeah, as Pat points out, according to one of the rules that the Public Utilities Commission has laid out for the interconnection of these kinds of systems to the utility grid, Lanai is full and can't handle any more of these types of systems, what we call distributed generation or grid-tied PV systems. And so in terms of whether the Sunrun product would be available there, I think that's actually a question for Lynn. It never came up in our discussions as to whether or not Sunrun would finance systems that had battery backup. I don't know the answer to that question. But for Lanai, you would need that kind of system in order to do this or any other kind of PV system, frankly.
Well,
to answer that question, we do not currently offer our service to non-grid-tied systems.
Okay. Well, I guess Pat will probably have to wait for maybe more capacity or more capability there to open up. Alex, though, one of his questions was, you know, what's the relationship to the grid? I mean, if I put it on my house in Mililani, do I unplug from Hawaiian Electric, or I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. It's still a grid-tied system. It's a net-metered system, and actually, all three parties, the host and Sunrun, sign off on the net metering agreement along with Hawaii Electric Company or Helco or MECO or wherever you are. So it still makes full use of the what I like to describe as rollover minutes. You know, you make more energy during the day and you put that out onto the grid, and then at night you kind of pull those back down. So you're using the grid effectively as your battery, as your storage. It's not truly storing it, but that's your effectively a storage mechanism for you.
You know, we want to continue this conversation because that is a really important point, and I'm kind of curious about the, the feed-in tariff and all that kind of stuff. But I want to hold that thought. We'll be right back after this short break to continue our conversation about residential solar power with Alex Tiller from Sunetric, Mark Duda from Revolusun, and Lynn Jurich from Sunrun.
Is this the right time for you to switch to solar power for your home? You can give us a call and ask the experts at 941-3689 or from the Neighbor Islands at 877-941-3689. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Thank you. The 28th annual Honolulu Century Ride will draw thousands of cyclists to enjoy the up to 100-mile ride. But is Oahu able to share the road with those who ride their bicycles every day? We'll find out more this week on Town Square, Thursday at 5. We'll see you then.
If you thought Aloha Shorts, HPR's program of readings from local literary press, Bamboo Ridge, was for school marms and bookworms, think again. For its next live taping on Sunday, October 3rd, Aloha Shorts takes it to the limit with sex, drugs, and rock and roll. The free taping starts at 6:45 p.m. in HPR's Atherton studio. The program is recommended for people 18 years of age or older. Reservations, call 955-8821 during office hours.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ryan Ozawa. And we're talking with Alex Tiller from Sunetric, Mark Duda from Revolusun, and Lynn Jurich from Sunrun about Hawaii's residential solar power options.
How expensive is it to get into solar? You can give us a call here at the station at 941-3689 on Oahu or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. And, you know, right before the break, we were talking about the three partners, Sunrun for providing the solar. You have the electric company and you guys. And, maybe this is a question for Lynn. How does it work when you're providing the solar power, solar energy, but it's also being fed back into the grid when there's, a low usage period. And then when the resident comes home and starts to use it, perhaps they even use more than, they've actually put back into the grid. Does the electric company sort of feed back into to serve up that sort of residual power requirement?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Good question. The relationship with the customer and the grid stays the same if they get solar with us or if they purchase it themselves. So what we do is we replace a portion of the electric need for the home based on, what the homeowner wants and how much capacity there is on the roof. So it's similar to... we like to say a hybrid car. You get some of your power from the solar, you get some of your power from the utility company, and then blended all together, you're saving money overall. So for the majority of our customers, we're replacing about 70 to 80% of their demand. They're still benefiting from those rollover minutes that Alex mentioned, but they're still continuing, they're still hooked up to the grid, they still get power at night, and they continue to buy about 30% of their power from their electric company.
Well, that's probably also reassuring to a lot of people as well, that
yes.
backup exists. Mm-hmm. Well, we've got several calls on the line. We'll start with Flynn from Mililani. Welcome to Bite Marks Cafe.
Hi, gosh, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Hi, thanks. I have a quick question. I'll take the answer off the air. With the evolution of solar technology and the timeline required before you begin to see the benefits of installing a system in your house, do you have to worry about the system that you put in becoming obsolete before, it, 9 years down the road, you begin to see a payback?
Well, that's a good question, Flynn.
Thanks.
I was kind of curious about that. Some of the payoff period for a system you said was maybe about 6 to 9 years. But then in the case of Sunrun providing the service, would the benefit really be to, in terms of buying your own system, that your system is now paid for after that 6 or 7 year period? Or does it have to be replaced soon thereafter?
Typically, we think of the lifetime of these things as 25 years. They actually kind of don't really wear out. They continue to produce, even after that. But at some point, you figure, all right, the thing has kind of done its work, and just sort of hypothesizing into the future that something may end up replacing it. But in general, the way I think of this is, if you buy a system that is going to produce, all or most of the power you need, it doesn't really matter to you if 10 years from now somebody could have made a system that did the same thing in half the space or using a different technology. What you're interested in is not buying power from the utility or fixing your energy costs. And so the ability to do that using this technology, it shouldn't be kind of undermined by the fact that way down the line there may be something else. I think I'm sorry, just to sort of finish the thought. The other thing that we see is that there really is a lot of conservatism in terms of the technology kind of comes out of the finance side because, you know, I could invent something that looked like it was better and 3 years from now it might fall apart. And so this is a really tried and true proven technology. The technology improves at very, very marginal rates in terms of its efficiency. It's not really like computers in that sense where, you know, Moore's Law doesn't apply to the PV industry, I think is the way to think of this.
Now, Alex, Mark mentioned that, you know, that you might have a 25-year life, but I think also with a system, with a setup like what you're doing with Sunrun, if there is a liability in terms of your system suddenly being outdated and, you know, not the best technology on the market, that kind of takes that liability away from the homeowner this way, right?
Right, absolutely. I mean, that really is the beauty of working with Sunrun. They have absolutely – the customer has – the homeowner power user has no worries. There's nothing to be concerned about from a warranty standpoint. You know, Sunrun is a large scale buyer of solar systems. As Lynn pointed out earlier, they've got over 5,000 systems out there. So they know how to buy the right technology. They know how to find the right people to put it in. They know the right people that are going to provide the right warranties. And really, the warranty is between Sinetric and Sunrun in our case. And so, you know, that's it's one of these things where it's just taking all of those issues off of the plate for the homeowner. Again, $0 up front to get started in most cases. And again, jumping right into savings. And I think Mark pointed out something that was really interesting. I like to kind of push on this concept, this fixing your energy rate. You know, you may or may not plan on being in your house for 20 years. You may or may not be in it for 10 or even 5. So if there is some concern that perhaps I'm going to move to the other side of the island, I'm going to get a different job, my kids are going to move out and I'm going to want to downsize, whatever it might be, and you're not necessarily going to be around long enough to start to have your system pay it off and really reap all of those really long-term rewards, here's an opportunity to go zero out of pocket. You know, from day one, start saving and lock that price, lock that cost, just in case we have another 2008 where oil prices shoot sky high. You're locked up, as Lynn pointed out. You know, the 70% of your bill, approximately, is being curtailed. It's a fixed amount, and you can plan for that, especially if you're on a fixed income or something along that.
You know,
line.
We got a number of callers kind of queued up, and we want to welcome Claire from Kahalu on the line, and want to welcome her to Bite Marks Cafe.
Hi.
Hey,
my question actually dovetails right in with what the guy was just saying about if you're not going to be in your home, you know, for any length of time. My parents are both elderly. I live with them right now. As soon as they are either passed on or no longer are able to stay in the house, you know, the house isn't going to be put up for sale. So I'm wondering, how does that work when you have this kind of Sunrun system set up where you don't actually own the system?
You want to have Lynn tackle that one? Lynn, how would you tackle that situation where, you know, let's say the house has is equipped with Sunrun, but it's, you know, sort of changing hands?
Sure. Actually, I had a customer just say that to me today who said, you know what, why would I sign this 20-year contract with you when most marriages don't last more than 7 years, which I thought was pretty depressing. But it's a great question. We've had a number of homeowners move and transfer ownership. So we give a couple options. The most popular option so far has been you just transfer the contract with the house. So it's not a lien in your property, but the new home buyer can just take the contract, and now they're buying a home with a discounted utility bill. So again, back to, you know, Bert's comment, this is, we're really like a utility company. Now it's a selling advantage. In fact, we just partnered with a home builder, and we have our solar service plans as a standard feature on new home communities, and almost 100% of the buyers of these new homes who knew nothing about solar have elected to take the service. If the new buyer doesn't want the service for some reason, there's a buyout clause, just like on the lease of your car, and you can, you know, purchase the system with the proceeds from escrow, with the proceeds from the home, and sell it with the house. And there's a discount on that purchase. You know, it wears down the asset value over time, again, just similar to a car lease. So if you are in a situation where you want to purchase the system and sell it with the house, your total out-of-pocket money, meaning, you know, the amount of money you paid us for your monthly fee plus the buyout cost, is generally less money than if you bought the system yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I definitely liked knowing that it might now be sort of an option eventually when you get a new home. I suppose that might be coming up. We want to get to another caller, Gordon from Palola. Welcome to Bite Marks Cafe.
Hi. I wanted to change the conversation a little bit and go back to hot water. I live in Palola, and I heat my water with gas, and my gas bill is about $50 a month, and I'm just wondering if it would pay me at that level to switch to solar-powered or thermal heated water.
Well, Mark, you want to tackle that one?
It's a little tricky to do that without a little bit more information. But in general, as a very, very rough rule of thumb, you figure it takes about double the length to pay off if you're using gas as it would be if you're using electricity when you go from, you know, from one of those things to solar. So, that's about as good as I can do without a little bit more information. So.
Well, you want to.
That certainly is a help. It's still, in your view, is a worthwhile investment. It just takes longer to recoup the initial investment.
That's right. And, of course, we haven't spent much time talking about the environmental benefits of these systems. So even if it does take a little bit longer, there's still other issues at stake here besides purely the financial, although, of course, those matter to varying degrees to each particular consumer.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, thanks for your call, Gordon.
Thank you very much.
Next up, we've got Johnny from Ulupalikua. Welcome to Bite Marks Cafe.
Aloha. Thanks for having me on the air. I have a couple issues. I've been working, and I build water systems on Maui, and so I deal with a lot of off-grid things. One of the questions I have, this is kind of a tiny market, so all respect to the corporate salesmanship, what's to stop a normal person from getting one of these, buying into a power purchase agreement and then still building their own switching and battery backup system? Why can't you have both? Well, what is to stop anybody from having both?
So you're suggesting that you would have a grid-tied system but with a battery backup and use the Sunrun product?
Yeah, sure. Why not? I mean, unless there's something explicit in your contracting.
No, well,
that's something that's unwise because, you can have both. I just think that should be put out there.
Well, you're just going to make it more expensive for yourself because Sunrun is going to charge.
I understand that part, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, sure.
Given somebody can, it's still cheaper if you had some Sunrun system. You have that agreement. You've got the grid as a backup if you're, on grid, and then you've got the batteries in case in case the grid system went down for an extended period of time, you'd be totally independent.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. Most people tend to view that as having two batteries, one being the battery system, the other one being the grid under your net metering contract. And so, they're not willing to take on the cost of that. But if this ability to continue to operate when the grid itself is down is really important to you, then you could absolutely do something like that.
Oh, great. Thanks for your call, Johnny.
We also have another call from Herman, and we want to welcome him to Bite Marks Cafe. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I'm an installer of PV systems, etc., on Maui, and I'm calling to tell you that the lanai question. It's only the Minelli circuit that's full. Looking at Miko's website, Lanai City is not included in that. Sometimes there's a lot of trees there that make it difficult, but if you go to the utilities website, they'll have a renewable energy section. They'll have important updates, and then you'll find the actual areas that are at saturation listed there.
All right.
Great. Well, thanks, Herman. We appreciate that. That's actually a good point. Now, just to clarify for the listeners, though, Sunrun is only available right now on Oahu, Maui, and the Big Island, and they may expand that in the future. I don't know if Lynn wants to comment on that, but for the time being, those are the only markets where Sunrun is available right now.
Lynn, do you want to add to that?
That is correct, and I think for the foreseeable future, those are the markets we're going to be in. So, Stay tuned. We'll let you know.
Well, Lynn, I'm curious. I mean, you said you have a number of markets on the mainland, and now you've come out to Hawaii. I mean, certainly you, from an industry standpoint, are probably aware of a lot of the work that's happening out here in terms of alternative energy. Do you think that Hawaii presents any specific challenges that you don't see in any of your other markets?
Well, it's interesting. I don't think so. I think, you know, the fact that Hawaii has very expensive electricity means that solar power is more competitive, means that we can save money for most consumers immediately, which is unusual compared to, you know, the other markets that we're in. The one expense that we have incurred in learning about the market is just that part of our service agreements, we insure the system for all the homeowners. So we take care of part of all the maintenance, is all the insurance. And so what we needed to do was just kind of educate our insurance companies and make sure that they understand that this market does not present any additional risks. So really that was the only hurdle that we came across. But otherwise, I think, you know, the fact that the market, you know, it's so affordable for people and that the consumers are so engaged and interested in this is a huge plus for us.
Yeah, I think there's actually, this is Mark, there's been a lot of pent-up demand here also, and Sunrun is really the first wave of the release valve on that, that there's a lot more people wanting to go solar than have been able to do it so far. And so I would imagine that from their perspective, this is really a market that was, you know, that they perceive as really having been waiting for them.
You know, we got time for just maybe one more question, and this comes in from email by John Rogers, and he says, we currently have a 3-kilowatt PV system installed in our house with a net metering agreement. We intend to purchase a Nissan Leaf as soon as they're released for sale on the island. Is anyone working on being able to use the Leaf 24K battery as backup power supply in the event that the grid goes down?
Wow.
That's an interesting technical question.
It's
almost like a battery question.
I can't say any of the engineers at SunEtric have been working on that one. I don't know about you guys.
You know, for us, we're seeing a lot of interest from people that have Leafs coming, and they're sizing their system. You know, they don't want to buy a Leaf and then run it off of power that's made by burning oil. The whole point is to get off of burning oil. And
right.
So, there's a lot of interest among those kinds of consumers, and they do contemplate charging the Leaf with the PV system. In terms of whether or not the Leaf can actually serve as the battery, I think that's an easily answerable question. It's just that Alex and I don't happen to know the answer sitting here today. There's certainly someone that could answer that for you.
I like that question because some of the electric cars we've talked about are designed to, like the pilot program that the military is getting into, that they actually, as they're moving around, they're storage systems for the grid.
Yeah, maybe we'll have those guys come on the radio and we can ask them that question. We're kind of winding down. Lynn, give us where can people go to find out more information about what you guys do?
Sure. They can go to our website at sunrunhome.com. It's sunrunhome.com. And there's a phone number on there. They can send us an email, give us a phone call, and we'd be happy to help them.
Great.
That's great.
How about you guys?
For us, it's revolusun.com. That's revolusun.com.
And Alex?
SunEtric.com, SunEtric.com, or 262-6600.
All
right, great. Mark Duda is with Revolusun. Alex Tiller is from SunEtric. And, of course, Lynn Jurich from Sunrun. Mark, Alex, and Lynn, I want to thank you all for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Bert. Thank you very much, Bert.
And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we'll talk with Ren Horner and Lynn Fujioka about using aquaponics to learn science, technology, engineering, and math in the schools.
If you missed any part of this edition, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. And if you have any comments or suggestions, you can email us at feedback@bitemarkscafe.org. Or you can find us on Twitter. I'm at Bite Marks.
And I'm at Hawaii. Our engineer is Lillian Song, and our executive producer is Beth Ann Koslovich.
And we close with our song pick of the week. Here's Smashing Pumpkins with a song called Never Lost. See you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.